So, do we have any questions before we get started today? Ready to roll? Keep rolling on the Hemiptera. He said I'd hope to get through the Heteroptera part today, but I think there's still just quite a bit. We may not get that far, but we'll get a good chunk of the Heteroptera done, and then on Thursday we'll finish it and get going on the Homoptera, and then after that we have the other Hemipteroid groups. As you recall, last time I think we were in the Simicomorpha and just did the Myridae, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we're ready to start the Anthochoridae. And again, the Anthochoridae, in some ways, you might confuse with the Myridae because they both have a cuneus. Remember the cuneus? It's when you have that fracture.
This is that fractured wing.
Yeah, and divides the tip of the wing into a little. If you come out down this outer margin, you can see a little fracture going in. Mm-hmm. Like that. It divides that tip of the wing into what's called a cuneus. Both the Myridae and the Anthochoridae have a cuneus. The Anthochoridae have ocelli, though. And remember, the Myridae did not have ocelli except for that one subfamily, the Isometopini. And also, the Myridae had two or three closed cells at the base of the wing membrane. These don't have closed cells. In fact, most of the time you can't even see any veins. If you do see veins, there'll only be two or three weak longitudinal veins. Now, as you can tell in this handout, I've marked it up some. This has traditionally all been called the Anthochoridae. Back a few years ago, one of our leading heteropterists split this family into three, called the Lictochoridae, the Lasiochilidae, and the Anthochoridae. And it doesn't seem like it's being accepted very well. Most people are still kind of just recognizing them all as the Anthochoridae. So, but just for your information, what I've drawn on here, and I didn't erase it this time just so I could leave it on here, but these, what I've drawn on are what's looking at the underneath side. Mm-hmm. Where the scent glands are, kind of between the middle and hind legs. Mm-hmm. So this would be, like, here's one coxa and one coxa. This is only half. The other half would be on over to the other side. But right here's the scent gland, and it comes out and curves forward. And that's what you see in the Lictochoridae. In the Anthochoridae, it just, there's the coxa again. This comes out here and just goes straight. It doesn't really curve any direction. And then in the Lasiochilidae, it comes out and curves posteriorly.
So Lictochoridae, it curves up. Lasiochilidae curves down. And Anthochoridae, it just
in general goes straight out, yep. Also in the Lictochoridae, there's a tendency for the last two antennal segments to be smaller in diameter than the first two. So the first two are fairly thick, and the last two segments are thinner. For our purposes, I think we'll just recognize all of these as Anthochoridae and not worry about these other split families until they kind of consensus develops. Actually, the person who split this up, and I should have brought it in here, he and another guy put out a book on the Heteroptera of the world. It has nice write-ups of all this stuff back in 1995. And actually, they're coming out with a new version of this book. The old version was 300 and some pages. The new version is going to be over 800 pages. So they're really... But it'll be interesting to see how he treats this family in this new book, if he still maintains the separate families or whether he puts them back together. But for our purposes, Lasiochilidae doesn't occur here. So So we don't have lasiochility in North Dakota. Lictocordy, I don't think it's been recorded from North Dakota, but it should be here. We should have a species or two of lictocorids. Anthocordy, sensu stricto, does occur here. This is the minute pirate bugs, the genus Aureus. I think the one we have in the state is Tristicolor. It's hard to tell. Tristicolor and Insidiosus are really close, but anyway, we do have it. It's common. You catch them all the time, beating on flowers and different things. These are predatory, feed on aphids and other small insects. They are sometimes used for biological control programs. Also, these things, I put in parentheses, they sometimes can bite, but they're so little it doesn't really hurt. You'll just, oh, that thing's nipping me a little bit, but it doesn't. So, but anyway, that's the Anthocordy. Again, like the Myrtidae, they have Acuneus, but they differ from the Myrtidae in having ocelli and having the wing venation somewhat different. So, next family we talk about is the Cimicidae, which are the bed bugs. Oh, well, I'll mention it here, and then Anthocordy sometimes do the same thing. But bed bugs, these are, you're probably familiar with these. They're small to medium in size, flattened dorso-ventrally. They are parasites on mammals and mostly mammals. Sometimes, well, yeah, some birds too. Birds and mammals. They really don't look like anything else in the Hemiptera. You should be able to identify them in the Hemiptera, no problem. Where you'll have problems with the Cimicidae is when we get to the lice. Later on, the Theraptera, the lice. These things can look a lot like some of the chewing or sucking lice. Things to look for, the lice are wingless. These things are pretty much wingless, but they usually, the adults anyway, have two small little wing pads at the base of the abdomen, whereas the lice won't have that. Also, if you look at the tarsi, the tarsal claws on these are small and just normal looking, whereas in the lice, a lot of times the claws are really huge and well developed to hang on to their hosts. So, let's see, what else we need to say? Rostrum's three-segmented, tarsi three-segmented, flattened, obligate parasites of birds and mammals. Eggs are laid in crevices. A lot of times, like the bed bugs that attack humans, they're not out on you all the time. They'll hide in cracks and crevices during the daytime, and while you sleep, then they'll come and take a blood meal. I've actually got some old antique insecticide puffers. They're little things that can puff dust in cracks and crevices. It's one of the things I used to do a lot, is I collect old antique insecticide things. A lot of these in this display out here are from my collection. So, but they used to be a lot more of a problem than they are now. They're making a comeback, though. When I first came here to NDSU, we used to get bed bugs in fairly frequently, but they almost never turned out to be human bed bugs. The first question we would ask people is, do you have birds nesting in your gutters or on your roof someplace? And oh yeah, there's birds in the... And sure enough, they turn out to be species that attack the birds, and they got so numerous that they would come through the ceiling and get on people some too. But it seems like now the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen kind of a switchover, that we do see a little bit more of the human bed bugs than we did before. We still don't see very many. I don't know that we've had any come in this summer or that. So these can reproduce by a process. Well, the mating is called traumatic.
Yeah.
Insemination. That's what I didn't mention. Some of the anthochorids do the same thing. Not all, but just a few. But they'll have this organ on the underneath side of the abdomen called the Ribagas organ. Surely it's spelled out there someplace, isn't it? Anyway, Ribaga organ, where the male actually pierces the abdomen and injects the sperm right into this organ, and then the sperm migrate through the hemolymph to the ovaries, where then fertilization takes place. So, again, these can be a pest on humans. In the New World here, the species is Simex lexillarius, there in the center. In the Old World, it tends to be more Simex hemipterus. Again, shouldn't have any trouble with identifying these in the hemiptera, but may have trouble when we get to the lice a little bit. Jerry's got a couple handouts on those. He also has one there for you on the polyctenidae. It's a family we don't require, but you ought to just, for your interest, be aware of it. They're parasites gets on bats, so bat bugs, which I don't know if we've got any. That'd be another good one. You guys catch some bats and get some bat bugs off of them for us. That'd be a good catch. What's that?
Now I need to figure out how to catch bats.
Some of the buildings. I think over in Ceres Hall, up in the attic and stuff, there may be bats. And a number of years ago, one of my neighbors cut down one of those huge spruce trees in their yard, and they were roosting up in the middle of that. So the spruce was so thick that it was a good shelter up in there. So, the next family, still in the Simicomorpha, the next family is the Nabidae. You guys should have caught these out on our collecting trips. They were pretty common at Mere Pool and various places. These are called the damsel bugs. These are predatory also. You might confuse these with the next family, the Regiaviidae. These have four segmented beaks, but the problem is the first segment is very short and robust, but this is number one, this one is number two, number three, and number four. So they have four segments. One, two, three, four. When we get to the Regiaviids, you'll see that they only have three segmented beaks. These tend to have a pad of hairs at the base of the tibia. That's what that figure there in the center shows, the tibia with a little pad of hairs at the apex of the tibia. And these also tend to have a fairly characteristic wing venation. They have lots of marginal cells. So you'll see all these marginal cells going just around the edge of the wings. The forelegs are somewhat raptorial. Again, they are predatory, feeding on aphids and other small insects. The wings may be well developed, or they may be short winged. That upper left hand figure, you can see, well, both those upper left and upper right have short winged versions. Again, some of these have been studied for biological control. You may also confuse these with some of the Lygeid groups when we get to those, but as you'll see, the Lygeid groups have much different wing venation. They'll be just four or five longitudinal veins in the wings, and without all these marginal cells. So again, these were fairly common. There's some black ones that kind of run around on the ground some more, but most of these are kind of a tan to tannish gray in color. We've got a number of one really common species. Probably 90% of what we catch is this Nabis americiferus. But then there is another half dozen species or so that are less common in our area here. Okay, the Regviidae. This is another fairly large family. And as I said, now it only has three segmented beaks. There's one, two, three. There's one, two, three. And also, if you look at them kind of from the side, the beak kind of leaves the head and goes downwards, and then it curves, or kind of bowed, and curves back around towards the body. And so the tip then comes up and kind of meets the prosternum here. So you can see it kind of goes down and bows back up. And on this prosternum, there's this groove that's got little ridges going crossways, almost like it could rub the tip of its beak in there and stridulate some. So, but anyway, the beak kind of comes down and then comes back up with the tip fitting into this little groove. That's why I was saying the very first family that we looked at in the Hemiptera was the Anicocephalidae, the unique headed bugs. And they used to be thought to be real closely related to the Regviidae, but they don't have this beak structure with the tip fitting into the prosternum and that. So now they think they're quite different. What else? The Regviidae, these are mostly predatory. The antennae are four-segmented. The forelegs are somewhat raptorial. They can grab hold of prey. Again, some of them can stridulate by rubbing the tip of the beak on that prosternal groove. As I said, a lot of these are predatory, although there are some that are parasites. For example, this one in the lower left-hand corner, this is the subfamily Triatomini. Its genus is Triatoma. You guys know about Triatoma, do you? What's the kiss? The I about gave it away. What's the common name? Yeah, here you go.
Chagas disease. It's a kissing bug.
Yeah, they're called kissing bugs, and they can transmit diseases. And one of them they can transmit is Chagas disease. I like this other common name. Some people call them blood-sucking cone noses, because their head kind of goes out in a little cone out in front too. So it's funny because these things, most Regviids, that if you get bitten by one of them, it's a very painful bite. I've been bitten by several different things, but these are not painful. They'll come, so they hide during the daytime, and where they were bad in the tropics is when people had a lot of like thatch huts and that, they would hide in that thatch during the daytime, and then when people were sleeping, they would come down, and they had a tendency to bite around the mouth. And again, if you had a painful bite, people would wake up, and it'd be counterproductive. So theirs are not as painful. But see, I've been bitten by one that's like this. I think this is Reduvius, actually. Down south, I was pulling weeds along the edge of my house one time and got nailed by one. It really hurt, and all of a sudden there I saw it running. Also, this one up here in the right-hand corner, this is Aurelius cristatus. But it's called the wheel bug. And it's hard to see from the top, but right here down the middle, from the side, this thing is really expanded upwards. You know, here's the pronotum, and this thing would be like, looks like the cogs of a wheel sticking way up. And so that's why it's called a wheel bug. But again, in the south, they're pretty common. And I know they can bite bad, but if you're careful, you can grab them. I used to, well, I actually was at my in-law's house one time, and there was a bunch on some plants they had, and I was just grabbing them from the back and putting them in my kill jar, one after the other. And all of a sudden, I grabbed one, and it was real soft. It had just molted to the adult stage, so it was still tenural. And it was almost like the, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Exorcist movie where the girl's head goes all the way around. It's like just wheeled its head all the way around and laid it to me, nailed my thumb. And so, but he's in my collection. I still got the last laugh on that one. So, but, let's see, there's some more on the next handout to talk about. There's quite a few different subfamilies. This subfamily to the left on this one's called the Emisinae. And they're long and stick-like. You could confuse these with walking sticks or even hydrometrids. But they usually do have the same beak structure as the others and the fairly distinct raptorial front legs. One interesting thing about the Emisinae is quite a few of them hang out on spider webs. They don't get stuck in the spider webs, and what they do is when a prey item falls in the spider web, they'll go and get it before the spider can. They call those kleptoparasites. Klepto meaning to steal. So they steal the prey items before the spider can get it. Those on the right-hand side, we caught some of those on our collecting trips. You remember those? Called ambush bugs. They used to be their own family. It used to be the Phymatidae, but now it's been rolled in with these. It's the Phymatinae. But they're the ones that hang out on flowers and that and catch insects when they come to the flowers. And they tend to be yellows or whites, but they often blend in with the flowers. You can see they have huge front legs for raptorial. A lot of times the last antennal segment's kind of swollen and that, so. So lots of different kinds of regivids. The guy who kind of established or was really a big time worker in insect physiology. If you take insect physiology, you'll probably hear of him. Was a guy named, I believe his name was Wigglesworth, but he did a lot of his physiology experiments on a regivid called Rhodnius prolixus. So you'll probably see that name pop up some too. That actually finishes the Semicomorpha. You know, this is going pretty good. We may get pretty far on this. So now we go into the Pitomomorpha, the last infraorder that we'll be studying. And the first family is the Aratidae. And I think one of my first lectures on the Hemiptera, I told you that there was a worker, this Merrill Sweet down in, was at Texas A&M, that he's retired now. But he believed that the Aratids were different enough that they deserved their own infraorder. So he proposed the Aratomorpha for an eighth infraorder within this group, but it hasn't stuck either. They still maintain the Aratidae, and most people do, into the Pitomomorpha. The Aratidae are called the flat bugs. These are often found under the bark of trees, and so they are usually very flat. They're the ones that are kind of granular dorsal surface. They have lots of bumps and just a rough appearance to them. They have very long maxillary stylets, but they're usually retracted up inside the head. That's what this is trying to show, is these stylets up inside the head. Then when they go to feed, they can, I don't know what a good word is, inject them out. They come out. What they're doing is, a lot of these feed on fungi and molds under the bark. And it would be good to have a mechanism so, you know, you can't, the bark, under bark, it gets pretty tight. You can't move in very far, and your food source might be fairly far away. So they can have those long stylets come out of the head that can reach a fair distance to tap into mold and fungi to feed on. They're relatively small, 3 to 11 millimeters. They're usually dark brown or black in color. Again, they have that granular surface to them. They can have winged or short-winged forms. Usually when they're winged, the wings don't reach the apex of the abdomen. So you can see in all these examples, the one up to the top right is a wingless form, but all the others have fully developed wings, it looks like, and they're not reaching the apex of the abdomen. They can fly. They do come to light some in that, so... Again, the rostrum is usually four-segmented, but you may only see 2 to 3 segments. They have the very long maxillary stylets. Tarsi, two-segmented, no ocelli. And again, they feed on fungi and stuff under bark. There's a few that occur in rodent nests, we do have several species in North Dakota. They're not very many species, but we get them in, and not surprisingly, I've described those lingering traps that look like the trunk of trees. Since these things get under the bark of trees a lot, you wouldn't be surprised that they would end up in some of our lingering traps. And so we do get them in those sometimes, those samples. So. Next family is the Piasmatidae. These superficially look a lot like lace bugs, those little brown seed-like lace bugs. Remember we talked about that? In fact, in a lot of the older works, if people did, say, the Tingidae of North Dakota, this family would be included with the tingids. And now we don't even put them in the same infra order. That this is that these are actually more closely related to the Lygioids. They just look a lot like tingids, but there are some definite differences. One of them is the wings. You can see on this handout Jerry put in the upper left there a tingid wing to compare it with. Remember how they were reticulate cells all throughout the wings? Where on the right is a piasmatid wing. And now you see that there is some wing membrane. Also, remember the tingids, the pronotum was usually expanded and produced back over the back so you couldn't see the scutellum. In these things you can see the scutellum from above. The pronotum doesn't project back over the back. So there is still a small triangular scutellum that's visible. These oftentimes have like 3 longitudinal veins on the pronotum, or not veins, but ridges on the pronotum. And oftentimes the juga are expanded out almost horn-like out in front of the head. You see the one on the left, it's not as noticeable, but a lot of times it'll have that. These are little small things. They actually resemble, again, seeds type. They're kind of browns or grayish browns. Most of these species get on plants in the family Amaranthaceae, which around here it's like the pigweed. You know, late in the summer you go find some good pigweed and the seed heads with it and just shake them and you'll get tons of these things. I have down there at Mirpool. I get them in my backyard, my bird seed, when this falls to the ground and comes up. So there's pigweed in that all the time. Also, some species sometimes can be pests on sugar beets. Sugar beets are an Amaranthaceae, so. Ocelli are usually present. Again, the corium and clavis will still kind of have that reticulate look to them, but usually you can see some wing membrane. The next family we'll talk about is the Burididae. These are called the stilt bugs. Does anybody know if you got any Buridids? Does those look familiar to you? I know they're around here, and I caught them fairly commonly at those South Fargo sites. You know, we went to one of those collected down there, but the Buridids, called stilt bugs. They're long, slender, almost stick-like, but they have usually the first antennal segments kind of enlarged apically. You can see just a little swelling near the end of the first antennal segment. And then the last antennal segment's that what we call spindle shape. Remember the first lecture? Looks kind of like a football. And that's what you see out here, is just the last segment itself. Sometimes even the femora are enlarged apically. So, they can be kind of spiny sometimes. The antennae are four-segmented. As I said, first antennal segment long and enlarged distally. Last segment, spindle shape. Rostrum's four-segmented. Femora are sometimes that clavate or expanded. Ocelli are present. These generally can feed on the sap of plants, but they also feed on eggs of various insects in that. So these sometimes, again, have been looked at for biological control. They tend to like solanaceous plants. Out in the wild, you catch them a lot of times on nightshade and those kind of plants. But in your gardens, you can find them on tomatoes. That's a solanaceous plant. In the south, you can get them, some species, a lot on tobacco and those kind of plants. The common one around here is this one in the center. That's the genus Gelysis. There's actually two species in North America. One's called Wickhami, and one's called Spinosus. The one to the lower left on this handout is interesting. It's Baratinus minor. It's an old world species that a number of years ago got accidentally introduced into the eastern United States, and it's been spreading westward. But I think the farthest west it's actually been recorded in the literature is still about Michigan. And 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, I collected some of these in South Fargo. That site that I was telling you about, again, one of those sites, before we got over back into there to the river, is out by the main road that I said we could stop at. That's where I caught that. This thing, and actually I've caught it 2 or 3 years in a row. I haven't been back down there in several years to see if it's still there, but I did catch it 2 or 3 years in a row, so it is established in that. And so even though it's only been reported as far west as Michigan, we know it's at least now this far west. So, okay. Now comes a little bit of the fun part. It's kind of hard to explain, but I kind of alluded to it briefly a minute ago. I said the Lygeid group of families, that about the next, oh, I don't know how many I say I would look at, six. I guess we're going to look at six. The next six families all used to be in the Lygeidae. Okay. The Lygiidae was a very large family with quite a variety of shapes and sizes and forms. And a number of years ago, not that many years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, and again, this is my buddy at the Smithsonian, Tom Henry, the guy I said that grew up 15 or 20 miles from where I grew up. He took a big look at this and did a big phylogenetic study and determined that we needed to split the Lygiidae up into a whole bunch of smaller families. In fact, I don't know the exact number, but it's somewhere around 15. He split the Lygiidae up into something like 15 different families. I think your textbook covers 10 that are in North America. Some of the others are only Old World or that. And I'm going to talk about 6 of them. But the Lygiidae as a group, there's a few things that hold them together as a group. The antennae are four-segmented. The rostrum are four-segmented. The ocelli are present. Antennae are inserted down on the sides of the head. But these all, the wing venation, it's hard to see in some of these, but they only have 4 or 5 longitudinal veins. And that works for all of these families I'm going to talk about, is this wing venation is only 4 or 5 longitudinal veins. So there's not a lot of veins. And to tell you the truth, well, it's a catch-22 for you guys. It's more families for you to learn, but it's also more families that you can get credit for on your collections too. But I like this split up. These all, again, are now groups that just look like they belong together or don't belong together. This first one is the Riparachromidae now, which is the largest family that's still left. Oops. And one of the ways you can tell the Riparachromidae is, and my handouts are starting to get worn out, but this one segment, if you look on the abdomen, all these sutures that divide the segments, most of them go all the way to the margin of the abdomen, but there'll be one, I think it's supposed to be between segments 4 and 5, goes up here and kind of just curves forward and doesn't reach the margin of the abdomen. So the Riparachromidae will have one suture that doesn't look like it reaches the margin. They tend to have the front femora somewhat enlarged. They're not really raptorial, though. These are mostly phytophagous. They feed on plants and plant seeds. Usually they occur on the ground, mainly on seeds. These are, you've seen when we were out there on those, on our collecting trips, when I was taking my net and going across really hard on the ground. That's what I was hoping to catch some of these. But this is also that story I told you about the same guy who did the stuff on the erratids, this Merrill Sweet that was at Texas A&M. He went on that collecting trip with me in Argentina. Had about lost his hearing and stuff, but this is how he collected these things, is he'd crawl around on the ground just spreading the plants away and stuff. And as you recall, he got away from us a time or two, and we tried to call him, and he couldn't hear us and stuff. We thought he was lost in Argentina. But anyway, that's how he collects these things, is just crawling around on the ground. And he gets a lot of them that way, things that we never don't catch by sweeping very much. So that was one of the old Lygia groups that's now the Riparachromidae. With these groups divided, we still have one family that is still the Lygiidae. So that's what you see on this handout to the left-hand side, are what is left in the Lygiidae. And there's a little better wing. You can see now just the few wing veins, 4 or 5 wing veins. But the Lygiidae, and this group, it's still the kind of bothers me a little bit, because it does still have two basic kinds of Lygiads left. These two on the left-hand side are large and colorful. So these are large, colorful insects. They're often reds and oranges, yellows, reds and oranges marked with black. And they're often, a lot of them are found on milkweeds. Got the small milkweed bug, the large milkweed bug. And so they're still the true Lygiidae. There's two more to the upper right there in that half of the page are small gray brownish things. This one here is in the genus Nisius, but it's commonly called the false chinch bug. So Lygiidae, the character for this is not as easy to look at, but on these Lygioid families, the spiracles that are going up and down the abdomen, in most Hemiptera, they're what we would call ventral. You can look on the ventral surface of the abdomen and see the series of spiracles. In some groups, the spiracles have migrated so they're ventral. They're actually on the dorsal surface. And in the Lygiidae, all of the spiracles are dorsal. So, all spiracles dorsal.
In that specifics of Lygiidae, or the entire group?
Just this small family. So just in this Lygiidae sensu stricto. Most of these feed on seeds also. The one that's bright orange, that's called the large milkweed bug. We didn't really have very good records of it from North Dakota. I think I'd seen pictures from south of Bismarck. For a long time, that's all we had. And then that was one of the things Eduardo, one of my past graduate students that was here, down in South Fargo, he found some on milkweed in South Fargo. And that year, then we drove up and down the river and found them on about four or five different places. So again, they were well established, at least that year. I haven't seen them. I think we saw some the next year, and then we haven't seen them for a year or two again. So they may not be staying here. The family on the right-hand side is called the Cymidae. The Cymidae, these are, again, there's not very many good characters. They just look like little tiny yellowish seeds. Some of them get on sedges and that sort of thing around bodies of water. I think I pointed some of those out around Mir Pool, the sedges growing up. Sometimes we get these Cymidae. But they're dull yellow or straw-colored, coarsely punctured. These are small, very seed-like, resemble seeds of sedges and rushes on which they live. The next family in this Lygiid complex is the Blissidae, which my handout is starting to get worn out, but Blissidae. These tend to be long, a little bit longer and slender in shape. In this family, all of the abdominal spiracles are dorsal, except for on segment 7, they're ventral. So again, the first, like 6, will be visible from above, and the last one will be down underneath. So abdominal spiracles dorsal, except those on segment 7 are ventral. They lack conspicuous punctures on the hem elytra. So the hem elytra, the corium, and that's not punctate. This includes, well, these really long, skinny ones are called Ichneodemus. And we do have a couple species here in North Dakota, and they can be pretty common on grasses and that. Out on the prairies in the wetter areas is where I get a lot of those. This one over here, more to the right, is the genus Blissus. And this is the true chinch bug. The false chinch bug causes some economic damage too, the earlier one I talked about, but this is the one that has caused a lot of economic problems in the past. These all tend to feed on grasses or monocots. Ichneodemus may be more on the, well, no, they're more on the stems. All of them are on, more on the stems and that. Again, Ichneodemus is more on the grasses and things. Blissus will get on things like sorghum and corn and cause major problems with those groups. I've been, as I mentioned in a previous lecture, I've been going through some of the old, what are they called, the Cooperative Economic Insect Reports, and Blissus is in those a ton of times, getting mentioned as pests. And we don't, they don't seem to be very common in North Dakota. The Ichneodemus, I get a lot of them, but the Blissus, it's only one here or there. The major pest, I think, is, well, there's Insularis way down in the south, and then throughout the eastern U.S. is Leucopterus. I don't think the one in North Dakota is even Leucopterus. There's a northern one called Canadensis or something like that. And it's just not very common, so we don't have too much of a problem up here with them. Then the last two families in this Lygeid complex to take a look at. The one on the left-hand side is the Geocoridae. These are called the big-eyed bugs. You can see why. They've got, their eyes are kind of enlarged and bulging on the sides. They're what we call reniform. Reniform, you know what reniform means, right? Kind of reniforms, renal gland. Remember our kidneys? They're kidney shaped.
Oh.
So that's where it comes from. It. So our kidneys are kind of they are kidney shaped, and that's the renal system. Reniform is kind of kidney shaped eyes.
Okay.
So eyes bulging on the sides of the head, reniform or kidney shaped. Almost pedunculate, which means kind of out on stalks almost. Spiracles on abdominal segments 3 and 4 are dorsal. So all the rest are ventral, but on segments 3 and 4, they're dorsal. Again, big-eyed bugs, to me, they just look like big-eyed bugs with those big eyes and that. These are predatory, feeding on other insects. And again, they're sometimes looked at for biological control. And then on the right-hand side is the Pachygranthidae. I believe the Pachygranthidae, all of the spiracles are ventral. So none of them are dorsal. Everything's ventral. These are coarsely punctate. They tend to be somewhat elongate and slender. The one to the left here is the genus Phlegias. The one on the right is Edancula. They're more common south and in the tropics, but these two genera, we have a species of each one of them in our area. Down there again at Mere Pool, I catch them in those roadsides fairly commonly. So Phlegias and Edancula, these are plant feeders. Phlegias tends to be on the grasses, and Edancula tends to be more on sedges and rushes, but and I get them in the same place together in the roadside ditches and stuff sweeping. So, and they're, once you look at them, they're fairly characteristic looking again. So anyway, that's the Lygian Greeks. Now we got a couple families that I don't think even occur here, but they're common farther south that you probably ought to be aware of. The Largidae, which they're fairly good size. They're not particularly large, but if you go by their name, but the Largid bugs, these Lacocelli, they have many more veins in the wings than the Lygians did. And you can kind of see in that upper right-hand corner one, the more veins in the wings. These have what we call the margins of the pronotum are rounded. Remember, we discussed rounded versus edged. So if you're going across the pronotum and come to the edge, it just gently curves around to the ventral. There's no ridge or edge there. It just kind of goes around. So more branched veins than in the Lygian. 7 to 8 veins rising from 2 basal closed cells. Pronotum rounded laterally. There are kind of 2 body plans. The more common ones are what you see on the upper right hand side. They're large, robust insects. They're kind of dark black to reddish in color, often with reddish or orangish markings on them. And they tend to be up on herbaceous plants more. Whereas those, the one to the left-hand side, are more, they're kind of ant-like in shape and look. They kind of mimic large ants. And you find those crawling around on the ground more. This is the genus Largus over to the right. And this is that Araphi on the left-hand side. Again, you can get them in the southeastern, well, in the southern half of the United States. But they don't quite come up here. But they can be quite common in the south. A few of them will come to lights. I have some tropical species in my collection where the eyes are out on stalks. There'll be a long stalk coming out like this, and the eyes are out almost like the diopsid flies. We'll get to that later in the semester. There's some flies that have their eyes way out on stalks like that. So, and then the next one, again, there's only 2 or 3 species in the very southern United States, but it's an important family, the Pyrrhocoridae. They're closely related to the Largids. Again, they have more veins in the wings than the Lygians. But now the margins of the pronotum are not rounded. They're edged. So if you're going across the pronotum and you get out to the edge, there'll be a sharp edge there. It doesn't just gently go around to the ventral surface. Again, you can kind of see the wing venation here. Much more veins than in the Lygians. These are called, he's got on there red bugs, but the big common name is cotton stainers.
Cotton stainers?
Yep. These are cotton stainers because they tend to feed on malvaceous plants. Cotton is one of the malvaceae. So a lot of these feed on cotton, and in the bowls, they'll pierce the bowls, and fungi and various things can get in those holes, and it actually stains the cotton. So hence the common name, cotton stainers.
They look somewhat similar to box elder bugs. Are box elder bugs in the same family?
A little bit, yeah. Okay.
Just wanted to check.
They're not, they're a little softer bodied than box elder bugs.
Okay.
Again, there's only a couple, two or three species in the southern U.S. I caught them in Louisiana, and I know there's another one in Florida. But when you get down in the tropics, they're tremendously common. And they'll come to light. Sometimes I've run lights in the tropics, and your sheet will just be full of cotton stainers. And there's lots of different species and lots of mimicry complexes. You'll have a half a dozen species that all look the same. There's a guy, a Dutch worker, who's passed away by now, but he did a big monograph of the neotropical cotton stainers. All of ours are in this genus Dysdercus. And this one here, this Dysdercus suturellus, is the one that's in Florida, I know. This is an old world, pure chorus, old world, short-winged one. But he did a big monograph on the Dysdercus, and even though they all look the same, or not all of them look the same, but you'll get a number of species all look the same, there's really good differences in the male genitalia and some other things in that, so you can tell them apart. They're not that hard to separate, but initially look at them and said, oh, look, I've got 10 specimens of one species, and then you start keying them out, and oh, wait a minute, I've got two specimens of each of five species and something, so... So anyway, common in the tropics, can be a pest on cotton and some other. They get on another common malvaceous plant is hibiscus. So again, down in the warmer areas where people are growing hibiscus and that, they can be a problem on those sort of things. Okay, now we go into a complex, what we call, well, it's the superfamily Coryoidea. And we'll be looking at three families in the Coryoidea, the superfamily Coryoidea. We'll be looking at the Coryidae, the Elytidae, and the Rhopalidae. This group, well, the Coryidae, we'll start out with the Coryidae. And one of the first things to notice is, and I didn't get it cleaned off from last time, I thought I did, but generally speaking, the head is narrower and shorter than the pronotum. So notice how much narrower the head is than the width of the pronotum in all of these examples. And tends to be shorter than the pronotum also. These have lots of longitudinal veins. All three of these families probably have more than five longitudinal veins. So it's a character for this whole superfamily. Lots of longitudinal veins. The Coryidae, these tend to be medium to large in size, often dark in color, but some of them can be much more colorful. Now, I noticed, and some of the other earlier families, he put shots of the side of the head, and it wasn't really pertinent to what we were doing there. This one is not accurate, though. It's where I need to mention. In the Coryidae, the buculae tend to come back here, extend back a ways, at least beyond the base of the antennae, which we'll see why that's important on later ones. But buculae usually extend posteriorly beyond the antennal base. Again, membrane with lots of longitudinal veins, head narrower and shorter than pronotum. Also, the scent glands underneath are very conspicuous. You can see the scent glands. And these do have a pretty potent bad smell to them. The group I work on are called stink bugs, but to tell you the truth, I think these things and the elided smell worse than the stink bugs do. So... these are commonly called leaf-footed bugs, and that common name comes from some species have part of the legs expanded into leaf-like looking expansions. There's some on the next handout that I'll show you in a second. These are phytophagous, feed on plants. Many will come to lights. There are some serious pests in the group. For example, this one, right under the word squash, is Anassa Tristis. And it's commonly called the squash bug. So it's sometimes can be a major pest on cucurbits, things of squash, pumpkins in that family. Some of them can vector diseases. Before we leave this page, there are some that have the antennae with some swollen segments too, which is kind of interesting. It's more of a tropical group. This one tends to, we have one kind of like this in our area that gets down on the ground more. It's, I think the genus name is Ceroleptus. These are big, huge ones in the tropics, but there's a half a dozen species or so in the southern United States. That's the genus Acanthocephala. And this lower right-hand one, this is black, pretty dark black, with the light areas a kind of a pale yellowish color. It's the genus Chelonidia. And it's interesting because it feeds on cactus. So fine, get some nice areas where there's a fair amount of Opuntia, the kind of the pear shape, the pear cactus. And you can find these things sitting on the cactus, which is, there's another genus called Narnia, not what you're thinking, but the genus called Narnia. Thank you. Well, it was around before the books came out, but gets on cactus. And the next handout on the Pereidae. This one has a couple of examples. Like I said, the hind legs have these leaf-like expansions in some species, and that's where the common name leaf-footed bugs come from. The one in the lower right-hand corner with those huge expansions, those are in the tropics. They get on passion flower. And there's quite a few different species of passion flower. Passion flower is a kind of a viney tropical plant with beautiful flowers, but quite a few different species, and each species of passion flower has a different species of this coreid that gets on it. So there's quite a few different species of these. This one, kind of to the upper right, is in the genus Leptoglossus. In the south, there's a common species called Phyllopus that gets on a lot of garden-type plants and stuff. It can be a pest on tomatoes and various things. So it's kind of a pest. Up here, we have a different Leptoglossus. It's called Occidentalis, which was actually a western U.S. species that's been spreading eastward. It came through here a long time ago. Even when I was 10 or 15 years ago, I was getting it in Indiana. But it gets on pine trees, various pines. And now it's been accidentally introduced into the old world, and it's spreading all throughout Europe and causing problems on pine trees in Europe. And Eduardo has reported it from Chile now. It's kind of funny, some of these things go forever staying where they belong or their native range, and then all of a sudden it gets introduced one place and then you find it everywhere. You guys are familiar with the brown marmorated stink bug. Mm-hmm. For all those years it was just there in Korea, Japan, China, and then all of a sudden it got introduced into the US, and then it got introduced into Europe. And now it's down in South America. It just seems like all of a sudden it explodes and just goes everywhere. So, but anyway, Leptoglossus occidentalis is one of those. It's now going all over the place. So, so that's the Coreidae. We'll, like I said, Ryan's got to leave here about 10 minutes. We'll can get through maybe these two remaining choroid families, and then all that leaves is the pentatomoidea, and that maybe we can start there on the next one, the pentatomoidea, and then try to do the homoptera groups. Mm-hmm. So the last two families in the choroid groups, this is the Elytidae. I kind of think the common name's a little bit of a misnomer. They're called the broad-headed bugs. Remember, the choroidae, the head was much narrower than the pronotum. Now in this, they're about the same width, and so that's why they call them broad-headed bugs. But to me, it's not so much because the head is broader, it's because the pronotum is narrower. Probably, to me, a better common name would be the narrow neck bugs or something, the narrow pronotum bugs. But anyway, the head and the pronotum are about the same width. Remember the Koreans in the last one, it was pretty close to the same. So these are commonly called the broad-headed bugs. Again, they still have lots of veins in the wing membrane, like the choroids. Now the buculae are short. So this is accurate now. They just have these short bucula that doesn't go back to the base of the antennae. Again, this one still has very distinct scent glands. Look in the ventral surface, they'll have the very distinct scent glands between the middle and hind legs. And so these do smell pretty bad when you disturb them. These are all plant feeders. There's common on legumes. I get them on clovers a lot. It's just sweeping red clover and crimson clover, and usually get them more on those than the white clover, but still some on white clover. There's some that feed on grasses. What we see here, like this one in the middle, is actually the genus Elytus. We have about four species of Elytus in North Dakota. This is another one over here. This one, second from the right, upper right, is the genus Leptocoryza, and it can be a pest on rice. We have a couple species, and the genus name may have changed on some of these, but we have a couple species in the southeastern U.S., and then in the old world, it's a problem on rice. The one we were catching fairly commonly at Mirror Pool, I think you guys got some, but I know I gave you some, is this long, skinny one right here. That was the genus Protonor, but it was on the, probably it's that tall bluegrass thing. The immatures, some of them look like ants, while others look like wasps. Some can stridulate, may help form aggregations. Again, some of these will come to lights. But again, elytids are pretty common around here. Should have some elytids. And then the last family in the choroid group is the family Rhopalidae. This is still kind of like the Elytidae. The head, I mean, you can see the pronotum is a little bit larger, but it's not like in the Choroidae. So the head and the pronotum are approximately the same width and same length. Again, they still have lots of veins in the wing venation. Now, these do not have conspicuous scent glands. You turn them over, if you look hard enough, you might be able to see a little tiny hole between the legs, but they're really no scent glands to speak of, and hence the common name, the scentless plant bugs. Again, the head about as long and wide as the pronotum. Thoracic scent glands are reduced or absent. There are some short-winged forms, but they're not usually real common. These are all plant feeders, feeding on fruits and seeds of herbaceous plants. Again, just in roadsides and old field situations, you can usually catch these. There's several different groups, several different genera. This one on the lower left is Harmostes. It tends to be a little flatter than the others. And of course, you guys should recognize this one here in the middle.
Yep.
That's your buddy, the box elder bug. It's the genus, I believe it's like Boisia. Ours in the east here is Trivitata, Boisia trivitatus.
Yep. Boisia trivitata.
Yeah, and there's a different species out west. I think it's like Rubro-nervus or something like that. Used to think it was all one, but now the one out west does look a good bit different than ours. Of course, the box elder bug, I went for so long and never saw a single one on box elders. I kept saying, why is it called a box elder bug? But, where we always saw them is trying to get into people's homes late in the fall or coming out of their homes late in the early spring. They're trying to overwinter in that. But now, since I've been up here, I've seen them. I've seen huge masses on the base of box elder trees now. And a couple years ago, when I was doing a lot of walking around town, you'd see them at least on the ground underneath the box elder trees a lot. And that, so.
I remember when I was working for Concordia's Dining Services, workmates and I went up outside to our break, and I said, hey, you want to see something real cool? I flicked like a little leaf towards that was next to a vent, and the entire crowd started moving.
Oh, there's so many of them, yeah. There's actually a reservoir over on the northwest side of Castleton that I often have taken students over there, and there's some box elder trees. That's where I first saw huge masses of these things on the base of a box elder tree. But I've seen them also now here in town, down at Elephant Park, over close to the river. Huge numbers of them on the trunks of trees there. So sometimes you might confuse these with Lygeids. Some of these do look a little bit like Lygeids. But again, they should have lots of veins in the wing venation, where the Lygeids should only have the 4 or 5 longitudinal veins. So. And that finishes the Choreidae, Choreoidea. And all we have, let's see, let me check one thing. I don't see that I have in my notes, so that's good. And so all we have left in the Heteroptera is the Pentatomoidea. And we can just save that for next time and call that a good stopping place. Anybody have any questions before we quit today?
I can think of.
Okay. So Thursday we'll do the Pentatomoidea and then start on the Homoptera groups. And may not get through that, but it doesn't matter, because then Friday, I guess, it's not this Friday. Is this Friday the time you had a doctor's?
I do have a doctor's appointment.
So yeah, we probably won't meet on Friday. Then Tuesday of next week we'll finish the Homoptera if we need to. And then, like I said, there's the lice and the Thysanoptera and Socoptera in the Hemipteroids. We'll finish up, and that'll be the place for the stopping point for the next exam. So we'll start talking about that in about a week.
I do have a question. The Lygid versus the Choreoidea, is it primarily the wing venation or the numerous veins?
That's the easiest way, yeah. There may be some other things that are harder to see and more detailed in that, but yeah, the Lygeoids will only have 4 or 5 longitudinal veins, and the Choreoids will have many veins, a lot more than 4 or 5 usually, so.
Okay.